From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at a local women's shelter, a place that's been a refuge for mothers and children looking for safety from abusive situations. Dealing with COVID-19, do people feel safe going there? Will the shelters be active? Are the resources still available? COVID-19 has created a difficult situation for people, often women and children, living in abusive situations and households. Many victims of domestic violence turn to school or the workplace for safe spaces, but many public areas are now shutting down. Experts from the National Center for Domestic Violence fear that this is likely to increase the feelings of isolation that many victims of domestic violence and abuse already experience. And one caller to a domestic violence center told the hotline, quote, "My husband won't let me leave the house. He's had flu-like symptoms, and he blames keeping me here on not wanting to infect others or bringing something like COVID-19 home. But I feel like it's just an attempt to isolate me," end quote. Other victims of domestic abuse have said that their partner has withheld essential goods from them, such as disinfectant wipes or medications. If you're a friend or a family member of an individual experiencing domestic violence, especially during this outbreak, you might be wondering what you can do to help. In Rochester, Willow Domestic Violence Center has received an increased level of calls from victims asking how they should adapt their safety plans. In the past couple of weeks, we've been focusing on positive ways to get through staying home, social isolation, more close-up time with loved ones. For a lot of us, you know, we're trying to make the best of it. We're trying to have some fun with it where we can, or at least sort of create new plans. But for other people, the risk has increased dramatically, actual safety risks. And our guests are here with us to help this hour. Let's welcome them now. On the line with us is Megan DeChateauvieux, President and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center. Welcome, Megan. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We're hanging in.
Yeah, I think we all are. Mary Whittier is on the line, the interim CEO of Resolve of Greater Rochester. Mary, how are you?
I'm good, Evan. How you doing?
Well, hanging in as well. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. Deb Rosen is the Executive Director of Bavona Child Advocacy Center. Deb, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for asking me.
And Jerry Lynn Sparks is with us, a survivor of domestic violence and an author about her own experience, and she's been on this program before. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Evan. How are you doing?
Well, you know, right now, I have to say, I feel good, and I feel like we're all trying to sort of find a new routine and a new normal, I guess. But, you know, looking at Noelle Evans reporting for WXXI last week, Megan DeChateauvieux, she reported last week that calls to Willow's domestic violence hotline spiked the previous Friday, then again on Monday, more than 40 calls coming in, more than double the usual rate. And that was a week ago. What's going on now?
Yeah, we're still seeing a spike in hotline calls. I think as we see this social distancing continue, we know that it will reduce the spread and flatten the curve, which we all want. And yet it means social isolation for so many survivors who are home with their partners. So they're calling us to see, you know, how can we adapt our safety plans? How can we get through this period of social distancing without putting ourselves and our children and our pets at risk? And so there's a very real crisis happening in so many homes right now because people are literally sitting, you know, on the couch or stuck together. The space in our homes is shrinking, as we're all feeling this, as I'm looking for extra spaces to go and do my work or to have the kids go up to the attic and find ways to make this work for our families. When you think about families that are experiencing abuse, those conversations become really critical and important for everyone to think about.
Mm-hmm. Mary, what's on your mind right now?
Well, it's interesting because right before all of the COVID-19 hit, we actually expanded our hours at Resolve Monday through Friday and then a couple evenings. We were right in the process of trying to hold groups, and all that has been suspended in terms of the group work. What we have seen, and for those that don't know about Resolve, we provide very intensive therapy and counseling for folks, women and men, that experience domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and it really is like coming to a private therapist's office. And what we've actually shifted to over the last, probably last week, I think last week was the last client we had that chose to come face-to-face. We are now moving to virtual therapy. We're using all sorts of tools like Doxy or Zoom, things that are safe, though, and every client is very different. We also had a few no-shows last week that were new clients that our therapists don't have as much of a relationship with and as much history on. So our concern is, how are they doing? You know, are they not able to take a walk around the block and use their cell phone to call, that kind of thing, because we are really being asked to stay at home and do the whole social distancing. It is a real concern, but we're trying to be as creative as possible and continue to provide those very important therapeutic services. Mm.
Deb Rosen, what's on your mind?
Well, children are on my mind. Children who are at home in unsafe situations without their usual access to safe touch points at school, at childcare and professional services in the neighborhood and extended family. So what we see in sort of humanitarian disasters such as this is that children who were already vulnerable become very isolated and are therefore increasingly vulnerable. So that weighs very heavily on my mind and on the minds of everybody who works at Bavona Child Advocacy Center. We do have some glimmers of hope that we'll be able to talk about later in the show, but I think it's fair to say that, unfortunately, this is a dangerous time for people in volatile households.
We are going to try to focus on, as Deb mentions, those not just glimmers of hope, but I also sort of action plans for all of us, because we may know someone in our life. We may know children or people who've been at risk or are at risk, increased risk. And we will talk about the most effective ways to reach out and to know if someone feels like they're in danger in these times. I want to bring in Jerry Lynn Sparks, because Jerry, I actually thought of you recently and your remarkable book. You know, Jerry was on this program, I don't know if it was a year ago. I'm trying to remember the last time we talked on this program about your book, Jerry. Sometime last year, is that right?
Yeah, I think January of last year.
And so it was about a year ago, and your book was this very open exploration of the abuse you suffered, how it nearly killed you, and the way you were able to finally wrest yourself sort of free of that from an ex who was extremely violent. And here's why I was thinking of you. You know, every day in this country, somebody decides to make a courageous and usually a very scary decision to either leave or to try to get help, to go to a shelter, to make a phone call, knowing that they feel like they could be in danger, but feeling like today is the day. I'm trying to think of what your life might have been like if you were in the relationship you were in, and then all of a sudden there's a crisis that forces you to be in the same space, and or the advice from government is don't go to work, stay home, because for many of us it's like, well, we're going to make the best of it. But if you were in back in that spot where there's an abusive person now in that same building with you every day, all day long, I wonder what that would have been like. What do you think about when you sort of juxtapose those ideas, Jerry?
I've been thinking about that, too, because there were times, because I have a special needs son where I couldn't leave the house and I had to stay home a lot with him. I was thinking of a particular time when we were in the middle of nowhere in Maine on vacation, and he had the car keys, and so I was trapped with him for a week and I had nowhere to go. What I did then was I stayed outside a lot, and I was thinking about that last night. What would I do if I were still, you know, married to that person with COVID-19 quarantine going on? Luckily, there's not such bad weather right now, but my instinct would have been what it was back then, was to just stay outside, go hiking, go for walks, have code words that I would tell a friend or a neighbor. I did proactive work ahead of time to alert my coworkers, my boss at the time, neighbors, if this happens, then do this. But for people who haven't done that, I think just trying to find as much outdoor activity to break up the day and the tension of where you're encountering them all day long, because proximity is a huge determinant, I think, of violence. If you're there, it's easier to, you know, them to reach out and, you know, hurt you. So try to break up as much of the day as you can with outdoor activities that are safe, of course, by the guidelines.
How concerned are you right now, Jerry, about all of those people, again, often women, but not always, who are now in that spot that you were in?
I'm very concerned because social distancing can lead to safety distancing. So safety distancing is what I think survivors are experiencing right now. Victims and survivors right now think, you know, Willow and Resolve are overwhelmed. They're full. They won't have time for me. And, you know, these groups have done a great job of getting out on social media and saying, yes, we are still open. Yes, we're having services. But in the minds of someone who's enduring it, they're thinking social distancing means I have safety distancing. I have service distancing right now. So my concern is that the lack of funding coming from various sources is not going to be enough to give people and agencies enough to take on this extra stressor that's been added to the system.
So Megan DeChateauvieux, I'll bring it back to you then, and we'll ask all of our guests to kind of follow up on Jerry's very important point there. Regardless of what we're seeing across the country and the shutdown orders, et cetera, I want people to know what services are available now, because someone in your life may need this. As the president and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center, what do you want people to hear, Megan?
Willow is open. Willow Center is open. We will remain open as long as we possibly can. We've heard from our funders in the state, and as the licensed provider of residential services, we have that connection to OCFS at the state level, and they are telling us, stay open. You are an essential service. So as we see the governor shutting down all of these businesses across the state, telling people to stay at home, he's saying to us, keep your doors open. So we are doing that. By mandate and mission, it's really important to us to be here for survivors. So the shelter is open. It is a 49-bed shelter with 16 bedrooms, private bathrooms. We are currently doing room service for meals, so just making sure people know that there doesn't need to be that added level of fear and coming into a congregate setting, I would think would, you know, give me pause, but we are taking all precautions to make sure shelter is a very safe and sanitized environment, and we're taking care of people who are staying there. Our hotline is 24/7, so anyone can call us at 222-SAFE. That's 222-7233. We also have a text line. So if someone isn't comfortable making that call or they're not safe to do so, sitting on the couch next to an abuser, they can text at 348-SAFE, 348-7233, and we're there to answer that as well. We're being creative. You know, as Mary and Deb said, we're being creative about how we reach out to people and how they reach out to us. So we are available on Facebook through Messenger. You can feel free to call or to message us, and we have counselors ready to respond. We also have all of our advocates who normally would be in the counseling center are now working from home for their health and safety, and they're taking those calls from their living rooms. The other really important service that I think I want people to know is still open is the court. So the courthouse is closed except for these emergency orders of protection and for violations of orders of protection. So probation staff are on site at the Hall of Justice, and they are still able to push through emergency orders of protection. And any order that has been provided will remain valid through the duration of the state of emergency. So if someone needs an order of protection and would like to talk with us about that process, you can feel free to reach out to the hotline and speak with one of our court advocates before you actually go into the court and walk through that. But that's very much still available. The emergency essential services that Willow provides are still operating in full. And we've been creative in adapting our other programs like the counseling center or mobile advocacy to be able to respond to the different changing needs of survivors right now. We're safety planning with people, so looking at every individual situation and figuring out what their options are. And as Jerry said, you know, safety plans can include code words to friends and colleagues and family members. And I think the most famous safety plan we might have seen in the Super Bowl commercial a couple of years ago, where there was a survivor who called 911, but it sounded as if she was calling and ordering a pizza. And the 911 operator kept, you know, saying, well, ma'am, you've reached 911. And she said, yep, I'd like a large pepperoni. Here's my address. And so These sorts of creative ways of getting around the person who's right next to you who doesn't want you to reach out for support.
Mary Whittier, why don't you, as interim CEO of Resolve of Greater Rochester, remind our audience the mission of Resolve and what you want them to know right now?
Yes, we too, as Megan said, we are open, and open differently, I think, than Willow, who, you know, I give tons of credit to for running a 24-hour hotline and a shelter. We do individual private therapy. We have a program called Survivor Transition Program, which is highly effective. And we have moved to, while our office is small and our staff is small, we are providing all of our therapeutic counseling and treatment virtually. So whether that is phone therapy, and this is real therapy, but it also, a lot of what our therapists are seeing is just the anxiety of folks around COVID-19. So yes, they're getting into the, you know, domestic violence and that sort of thing, but a lot of it is just, oh my gosh, he is not an essential staff person. He is sitting, you know, 4 feet from me, or I don't know if I can get out for a walk, even though that's what I want to do. So we are being as creative as possible based on what our clients need, whether that is Doxy, where I can see my therapist, whether it's over the phone, whether it's FaceTime, and again, in safe situations, because what we don't want is to put clients, and mostly it's mostly women, at risk. I am concerned that when things do settle down, how we will all see a spike in need for even more services. You made a comment, Evan, you know, we may all know somebody. I would venture to guess, between my work at Bavona and my work at Resolve, we all know someone mm-hmm. that is the victim of domestic violence or intimate partner violence. Mm-hmm. We all know someone that is the victim of childhood sexual abuse. People just don't go around with a stamp on their forehead publicizing that. But I will tell you, I've been here 2.5 months. I have had more people disclose to me about domestic violence than I did my first year at Bavona when they disclosed sexual abuse. It feels like it's everywhere. And I think we don't have time on this show to get into how do we deal with that as a society, because right now everyone's talking about COVID-19, but that's a whole other conversation to have. But we do. We remain open. We remain available to clients. If it's 8 o'clock at night that they need their, you know, virtual therapy, then that is what we will do. And we will absolutely get through this together. We will be there for our clients while maintaining safety, obviously, for our staff. And what I would say to my colleagues, Deb and Megan, if there are some therapeutic supports that we could help you with any of your clients, we are here for that as well. We have also referred clients to Bavona or to Willow, given their circumstances, because we're not a 24-hour hotline. I am thrilled to hear. I know that the emergency orders of protection are available, which is great, because there's a lot of concern about how am I going to get an order of protection when the quote-unquote courts are closed, but like Megan said, getting an emergency order is available. So that's a really, really good positive thing that a lot of our clients are just really afraid for. And as Deb well knows, our clients are afraid for their kids. They just are afraid for their kids. Mm.
Deb, you want to pick it up from there? Go ahead.
Sure, absolutely. So Bavona is also open, and what that means is that our facility at 1 Mount Hope Avenue is open, and we continue to coordinate the services of Child Protective Services and law enforcement that is housed here, working cases out of this building, our medical evaluation services through the REACH Clinic of Golisano Children's Hospital is also open. Not a day has gone by that one or more children have not come for investigatory and evaluation services here. So we know that the problem of child abuse continues, and we continue to address it to the extent that it is made visible to us. In addition to our investigatory and sort of forensic services, we also provide quite a lot of mental health services out of Bavona. This is an area that we've really focused on expanding over the course of the last year. And at this time, all of our mental health providers are providing teletherapy services, whether that's on the phone or in web-based platforms. So we're very pleased that kids who are connected to therapists here have that safe touch point and have that opportunity to continue their treatment and to express any new anxieties and concerns that they have. So also really important to note, the New York State Central Register, which is the child abuse hotline, is also open, and all jurisdictions of law enforcement are, of course, open as well for emergency circumstances. Mm-hmm. We are, for the first time here at Bavona, triaging our cases so that the most urgent and emergent cases are seen immediately. We never have a waiting list, and we don't even in this time of crisis. But cases that can safely be tabled for a couple of weeks, we are working with our partners to postpone those cases, pick up the investigation when it's safe to do so. But we do get a fair number of calls, particularly concerning child sexual abuse, that happened at some point in the relatively distant past. And so we know that children are safe from those abusers and there's not a current threat. And under those circumstances, we're able to postpone our services.
So listeners, let me start to address some of the questions that you may have about what happens next here and then how to check in effectively. Because I think there's a couple of big questions that we should have our guests, starting with Jerry, address. Number one, the idea that, you know, maybe I can't leave right now. Can I still leave? Can I leave? And for those of us who want to help in any way we possibly can, whether we know someone who has been in an abusive relationship or we suspect it, the most effective way is to reach out. But before we get there, Andrew writes and says, Evan, it sounds like Trump is already ready to roll back some social distancing. Will that impact what your guests are doing? Andrew, thank you, but let me address that, because the president has not formally said we're going to roll back social distancing, and we got to be very careful with this. Yes, late last night, the president was tweeting in all caps saying that the cure for this issue cannot be cause more problems than the virus itself. He is now parroting some of the language that we have seen in a couple of different op-eds from some writers who are not epidemiologists, who are worried about the impact on the economy, and saying maybe we've gone too far here. And everybody should be worried about the economy. I mean, we certainly all are here. But the White House's official line has not rolled back any of that advice. There is nothing imminent from the White House or the president, though given the president's history, it wouldn't be surprising to see him get impatient or a little sort of petulant about social distancing, because it's trouble for the Dow, it's trouble for the economy, but we are trying to follow the advice of medical experts. The medical experts advising the president disagree with his tweet from last night, and so my guess is you may see a little push-pull, but for the moment, don't assume there is any, you know, ending to this within days here. So having said all of that, let's assume that we're going to really do our best to kind of grind this out for a significant amount of time to come here. And we all hope it's not forever. I mean, it's not going to be forever. We all hope it's not long, but we also know that we have to do what the medical experts need us to do, especially in those hospitals. Let's assume it's not ending this week and it's not ending maybe next week. So I'll start with Jerry on this. For those who are in this situation asking, can I still leave? I mean, like, I don't know if I can leave right now. What would you say to someone who says, look, I read your book and I don't know, can I leave too?
You can leave right now. That's what I would say. You can leave right now. Services are there. There is a trained professional wherever you're going to go at Willow, at Resolve, Firehouses, Monroe County Sheriff's Office. These are trained professionals that will help you. They helped me. I stayed in my situation far too long. And one of the other things that I wanted to mention that's adding to family stress level is a lot of families that are currently trapped at home with their abusers, a lot of them, especially in Monroe County, have a special needs child in the home who cannot handle this lockdown. And my son's one of them. And so that's adding to the stress in the family for them and also for the parents in the house and the other siblings. And so there's this heightened level of stress, and that's putting the children at risk. My children were at risk from being abused by my now ex-husband whenever my son with autism would actually have a meltdown. He actually became violent towards towards my son and towards the rest of us. And so my son right now is not doing very well with the shutdown. This is where the aid packages to families come in, because financial stress exacerbates a domestic violence abuser even more, because they don't have the ability to self, they have the ability, they choose not to self-regulate. They choose not to control their anger and they put it out on others. Domestic violence is always the abuser's choice, but financial job loss contributed to my ex-husband's stress and violence. He then began self-medicating So it's important for the government to get its act together and get these aid packages out to families, because that's another stressor in the home.
Mm-hmm.
But to those people, you can get out, you can leave. There's wonderful resources to help you.
Megan DeChateauvieux, same question. For someone thinking, I'm worried about, you know, my life, my physical safety, with everything happening, can I leave today?
Well, the answer to that is always yes. Someone is always able to leave. There may be reasons why that isn't the safest option for them in the moment. And we do safety plan with survivors on a regular basis, not in a state of emergency, but on a regular basis of how can you continue to exist in that environment and keep yourself as safe as possible. So we don't tell someone to leave. We don't tell them they have to leave.
Right.
We say, what do you need to be safe right now? And that can include a safety plan that is more creative, that does involve these code words, that does involve ways of planning for, you know, being safe in your home. And it all depends on the lethality and the safety level in that particular abusive relationship. And, you know, we always say the survivor knows that best. They understand exactly what situation they're in. They know what is going to happen, how to keep themselves and their children as safe as possible in those settings. And if that means that they feel they need to leave, then we are here for them. We are open.
So after our only break of the hour, let me come back and I'll start with Megan, and we'll ask all of our guests this question. If you are thinking about someone in your life and you're concerned for them, you want to check in effectively, but you know that because we're all in closer quarters, people who are victims of abuse, and abuse spans a lot of different things, obviously physical abuse, but also emotional abuse, control, privacy, all kinds of things. How do you check in a way that works right now? This is one of the most important questions, and our guests, Megan DeChateauvieux, President and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center, Mary Whittier, Interim CEO of Resolve of Greater Rochester, Deb Rosen, Executive Director of Bavona Child Advocacy Center, and Jerilyn Sparks, who Jerry is a survivor of domestic violence and an author about her experience. We will address that question on how to reach out effectively next. Coming up in our second hour, recognizing autism. How young is young enough that we can see the signs when we take our kids to the doctor for well visits? How about 18 months old? How about 2 years old? There are some new guidelines from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and we're going to sort those out. Understanding autism, next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, so Megan DeChateauvieux, you want to reach out to someone, you want to check in, see how they're doing, but you know, you're concerned about all the different kinds of abuse, control, access to information, et cetera. What's the best way to start approaching this?
Yeah, I would. I think now is an unusual time, and that it's not terribly unusual for us to be reaching out to people that we may not have called or talked to in a long time. I know we've had family members that we don't see very often. We reach out to now more than ever. And so I think it's not that much of a surprise to see a new number pop up on your phone or to see an outreach from someone that you maybe weren't as connected to. So I wouldn't feel badly or like you're putting someone at risk by reaching out at this time. I would make sure that you take their lead and just reach out and say, hey, is it a good time to talk? And wait and see, and then check in and continue to check in as much as you possibly can. I would look for creative ways to do this, especially if you're thinking as an employer or as a colleague of someone, to set up some work meetings. Do some Zoom meetings that you're, you know, asking someone to participate in, and then during those meetings say, hey, if everything's not okay, you know I'm here for you, and you can reach out anytime. And to let people know that there are supports and there are resources available. Another option I think that's a really good one maybe is to set up ways to share resources on social. So as we're all scrolling through the news and we're scrolling through our Facebook feeds and trying to stay on top of everything that's happening, let's just say you happen to share the National DV Hotline resource for safety planning and how survivors can be safe now. And so someone at home on the couch next to their abuser can see that, and maybe they can go click on it in the kitchen while they're getting a snack and have access to the resources they need. So that kind of social sharing is incredibly important too. We have so much technology that we can use to our advantage right now that those are the ways I think we can really reach out and get to people. The other thing is just to keep checking in, just to make sure that you're, you know, keeping an eye on your neighbors, kind of being there for people whenever you possibly can, checking in just based, you know, do you have the groceries do you need? Do you have toilet paper? And then in that conversation, kind of trying to weave in, how you doing? Are you really okay? Is everything okay? Well, if that changes, let me know, and I'm here for you.
All right, Mary Whittier, what would you say to that?
Well, I would say, you know, there's not very many upsides of COVID-19, but having that as sort of an excuse, piggybacking on what Megan said, it wouldn't be unusual for someone who is the victim of domestic violence to get a text or a call or a FaceTime from someone that they haven't heard from in a while. And I think that we need to use that to our advantage. What we don't want, you know, two of the biggest reasons that people do not leave are children and finances. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. But what we don't want are our women and men to suffering in silence and to create more social isolation by not reaching out. Be that friend. I know many people that are taking this as an advantage of exactly what Megan said. I'm going to Wegmans. I will pick up something for you. How you doing? You know, just kind of putting that in there. I think the social media is huge. People are posting things all the time, and you can, if one of the recommendations is to get out for a half an hour walk, and you can do that safely, but it really does boil down to what is best for the client, what is best for the person in the situation, because they know better than anybody what they can and cannot do. I think sometimes they need some support, and I do think that what we cannot make a judgment, Evan. We can't say, well, geez, Sally, you should be out of there. You should leave now. Take advantage. Because that puts a judgment on. And we really don't know what it's like to be in her shoes. So I think the not creating more social isolation by saying, well, geez, I don't want to reach out to her. I don't want to send her a text. It's okay. Let's use COVID-19 as an excuse to say, all right, I'm going to Target, or I'm going to Wegmans, or I'm doing this, or, hey, you know, if it's a neighbor, you want to take a quick walk around the block, and, you know, or I'll come get your dog and walk your dog for you. And meanwhile, you make some sort of contact, because a lot of our clients they're just so socially isolated, and this on top of it. And think about all of us on this call and all of us listening. Think about how stressful it is for us not being, aside from Jerry, not being victims or survivors of domestic violence that we know of, right? And how stressful it is to be cooped up. Multiply that exponentially and have that empathy around what people must be feeling and how afraid people must be. But I am with Jerry and Megan. If someone were to say, can I leave now? The answer is yes, if that is where you're at, for sure.
And Mary, just to kind of put a fine point on this, you know, we may be thinking of people who we're concerned about, but we might think, boy, you know, if I reach out now, whoever is sort of, whoever we're concerned about doing the abusing could be reading their cell phone, could be reading their text, maybe be careful. You're saying, look, use this crisis as the excuse to increase the contact.
Yeah, and I think, and you can do that in a way, I mean, okay, even our governor said we don't need to go out and hoard toilet paper, but whatever it is that you need from the store, whatever you need to connect with a person, regardless of their situation, we should be doing that as friends and family and neighbors and coworkers and colleagues anyway. Mm-hmm. And we know a number of clients that have the code words. They absolutely have code words that they use that when they call that family member or coworker or neighbor, that's what they use, and that is my signal for I need your help and I need it now. Hmm. And so I think that whatever we do and whatever we do without judgment, because these are very, very stressful times, and none of us, Evan, have ever lived through something like this.
There's another angle here that another angle that I wanted to make sure that listeners are aware of, too, and that is with our teens and our tweens. And so as we're seeing the rates of dating violence and abuse happening among young people, we're talking, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, and then all the way up, we know that we're connecting through technology, and so how does that technology then become a weapon of abuse? And so we have so many of our young people who are exposed to this and who might be in even worse situations. So to parents, to all of us who are parents and who may know kids and teenagers and high schoolers that might be going through this, I think that these calls to check in also apply to them, and thinking about how you're watching and monitoring what your children are doing online, who they're talking to, how those conversations are going, because that's critically important now too.
That's a great point. Deb Rosen, Executive Director of Pavona Child Advocacy Center, what do you want people to know about checking on and reaching out to people, especially kids that you're concerned about?
Sure. The dynamics are a little bit different for kids, of course, when I reflect on what Mary and Megan have shared. But certainly, I think the same principle holds true, that we want to be taking advantage of these precious opportunities to make contact with people in the midst of our social distancing and our personal isolation. There are opportunities to make contact with people, and that includes children. So I think that the message regarding children is fairly pointed towards those who have some sort of virtual contact with children. That's teachers who are communicating with their students over various virtual platforms. It's mental health therapists who are continuing to provide teletherapies. It's other health providers that are providing telehealth services, and anyone else who, for whatever reason, has contact with children, now is a really good time to check in and to ask a very sincere, how are you? How are you doing? To really listen to that answer. If you are a person that is aware of family violence and aware of abusive dynamics within the household, it is appropriate, if you are in a private conversation with a child, to ask the question, are you safe? Is anybody hurting your body? Those are the types of questions that are appropriate to ask children if you know that your conversation is private and if you know that the child is able to answer that question without any repercussions. So that's sort of how I would hope that people are interacting with children. But there's also a very important opportunity to check in with caregivers to find out how kids are doing. So I think it's fair to say that even in abusive households, there are safe caregivers. And to check in with a safe caregiver about how things are going in the parenting relationship and how the kids are doing. We've heard earlier on the call from Jerry Lynn about struggles with children who are adapting to the social distancing, and to really inquire with caregivers, you know, how are you addressing that? How are you supporting your child? What do you need to be able to better support your child? So all of these sort of curious questions really, I think, are helpful and are a way of communicating our care and concern. And then I think it's important to add that if you do have reason to be significantly concerned about a child's safety, avail yourself of the resources of Child Protective Services, the State Central Register hotline number, and law enforcement. And even though we're in this highly unusual time of lockdown, those are essential services that are still functioning, and it may well be that a child is in need of those services. Mm.
So, Jerry, as Mary mentioned, you know, you're someone who has gone through this in some of the most extreme and violent ways, nearly lost your life, and now, you know, your life is so different. I mean, you're a parent, but you are free of the abusive situation that you were in for so long. And in that way, I do wonder if this kind of quarantine or sort of shelter in place, however we're describing this, do you think you have a different mindset than other people might have, having been through that? I mean, you've been through the worst. Do you have a kind of a feeling of peace about dealing with what we're dealing with right now?
Feeling of peace. In general, I'm very, very happy. I tend to empathize with people that are still trapped and thinking of ways to help them. One of the things that I do is reach out to people that I know in my personal life who are experiencing domestic violence. And like one of your other panelists said, there's no shame in them deciding not to leave today. But I do encourage them to, you know, you can. But one of the things I'm doing is I'm reaching out to those people and just saying in a very code worded kind of way, you know, how are things today? Or, you know, we have a code word. And I'm not doing it by text because I think those in writing can be dangerous. So I'm doing calls where I know that they're not being screened. I'm also with people I work with, they know my history. And so during a Zoom meeting, you know, that can be an option to, you know, use work as an excuse to let someone know. So I'm starting to think of creative ways to reach people. There's chat rooms and PlayStation games. I noticed with my children last night, they have a chat room in there, which I didn't know about. A lot of parents don't know that there's chat rooms in there. Could be used for good and for bad. But a lot of these gaming systems like Dungeons and Dragons, there's online communities where they could be used for both good and bad. If the teenager needs help, they could actually say it to that group, and that person could call 911. The other thing I was thinking is something from what Megan said about the Super Bowl script. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we could have scripts posted on Willow's page about here's what you could do, but not really one that's so well known, but a different way, some ideas of scripts for people to post, and then just flood the social media with strategies. You know, here's code words, you know, here's a resource you could turn to. Maybe instead of calling 911, you could, if you get to go to the grocery store, you could drop by the firehouse and say, hey, you know, this is what's happening. I'm just trying to think of all the different resources we have that we're not creatively thinking about right now. I actually did leave a lot of notes and tell my neighbors, which helped save my life. Last week, my old house was purchased by a state trooper, and he called me and said that, or his neighbor called me and said they found notes I had buried in the walls of that house. They found them. They actually found the notes I buried 8 years ago, and he has them in Ziploc bags. It was pictures of me and my four children. And it said, here's what's happening to me. If he gets away with it, he did it. You know, I did that. I actually buried notes everywhere, and he found one. So I just used a lot of creative ways to reach out to people because I was determined he wasn't going to get away with it. And it gives me chills just thinking about it. But, you know, just using our creativity right now, the school counselors could call and check on households. They could just, you know, teachers can divvy up and just check on the households in their, you know, vicinity and just say, you know, how are things going? Just as an excuse to get their, you know, their voice into that home.
Well, and Jerry, before the hour's up here, what I want to do now is kind of just focus on the other kinds of abuse that can happen because, you know, for a long time, a lot of people hear abuse and they think physical abuse, physical violence, and understandably so, and that is a massive problem and we are all concerned about that. But Jerry, let me start with you here. Are you concerned that with so many people sort of living up close, right in each other's space, that there are different kinds of abuse, emotional control, emotional abuse, etc., that could be increased at this time? Jerry?
Yes, I call it emotional violence because it has the same, almost exact same impact. It keeps you trapped, it keeps you feeling worthless, and it can lead to physical violence. So with this close proximity and no distractions and nowhere to go, with no hope of financial solvency because of the loss of jobs and the stress that this is causing on the system, I can tell you that there's going to be an increase in the emotional violence that we're seeing. And I'm very concerned about it.
Megan DeChette of you, Time Magazine, NPR, both reporting that already domestic violence centers are hearing from, again, usually women who are saying things like, you know, my husband won't let me leave the house. He's telling me he has to control my movement now. He has to approve anywhere I might go. He's blaming, you know, sort of symptoms, illness symptoms for any reason to control my actions. What are your thoughts there?
Well, yeah, domestic violence is all about power and control. That's what it is, the pattern of behavior to manipulate and exert control over someone else. And so that's absolutely happening in high numbers. It doesn't need to be physical, although oftentimes it does escalate to physical violence. We have actually, we canceled our luncheon this year. It was scheduled for May 7th. We've postponed it, and our speaker, Rachel Louise Snyder, wrote an incredible book, No Visible Bruises, What We Don't Know About Domestic Violence Can Kill Us. And she tells a story. One piece of this was that the survivor in her home with her two young children, her husband went out and got a rattlesnake from the nearby fields or mountains, wherever they were in Montana, and brought the rattlesnake back into the house and said, you know, if you don't do what I say, I will release the rattlesnake and put it in your bed. And so that threat alone kept her from doing anything. And so as we talk about the general anxiety, the threat of coronavirus, the exposure, the limitation of medications, I mean, there are so many ways that someone can control someone else's very way of being without laying a hand on them. So it is a very serious threat that we're seeing the emotional and psychological violence escalate in these times. We will call people. Our clients will call them when we're supposed to have a session, and they'll ask, is this a safe time, and are you able to talk? And they will say no. So then we adapt. We figure out how we can make that accessible to them in whatever way that we can. We're trying to go above and beyond to make sure that our programs are open, shelters open, everyone's healthy and safe, and that other resources in the community remain available for the families who need it. I want to put it out there, too. Thehotline.org has a fantastic interactive guide to safety planning. So if any survivors want to take a look at thehotline.org, they have this wonderful page that kind of goes through some of the pieces that Jerry was talking about code words and reaching out and how to make a plan for yourself and your children and your pets during these difficult times.
And if I could just say something, yeah. Evan, for a minute. I personally know families. They have never been hit once. But let me tell you, when the gun sits on the end table next to the bed every night, she knows. So actually, forget COVID-19 for 2 minutes. Abuse, people think abuse and you got to have black eyes and broken bones and end up in the ED with your three kids and your pets, right? No, abuse is psychological, mental, emotional, financial, sexual, physical, stalking. Think about that. And many, many of our survivors will say, you know what? My broken bone healed. My wrist healed. My black eye healed. What he did or tried to do to my core and to my soul, he tried to break me. And those are the wounds that take a longer time to heal. And I think we have to remember that there are many, many situations out there where there hasn't even been physical violence, and these women are scared for their lives and their children's lives.
Wow.
I would add to that all that's been said is true for children as well. We see horrifying stories of emotional and psychological abuse of children that is very, very difficult to investigate and prosecute, as you can imagine, and is just horrendously damaging to children. One thing I would want to add to the conversation as well is the issue of exploitation, and in particular sexual exploitation. When we're talking about, Megan referenced teens and tweens who are maybe in coercive relationships, and social media may be playing a role in those coercive relationships. In the sexual abuse cases that we see at Bavona Child Advocacy Center, there is an incredibly high rate of the use of media to take and disseminate images of that abuse. And so, again, taking COVID-19 out of the situation, this is a scenario that children are very, very vulnerable to, oftentimes unaware of, and so unable to address in any way or prevent the dissemination of these images. But when you add COVID-19 on top of it, and you think about a child that is quite literally trapped in a household that is sexually abusive, and that may be creating and disseminating child pornography as a result, as a product of that abuse, it's really a nightmare scenario that I would like to say is uncommon, but unfortunately is all too common and something that we certainly see in this community.
So let's end on a more hopeful note here. Deb Rosen, Executive Director of Bavona Child Advocacy Center. All of these organizations are doing the work despite the crisis, despite all of the different stoppages. These organizations are there and they can help. Deb Rosen from Bavona Child Advocacy Center, how can people get in touch with your services?
Well, they can call us at 935-7800, or they can visit our website, bavonacac.org. Our triage line is open. So a bright spot are the wonderful people that work at these organizations. Oh, my God, these people are just incredible working through this crisis. So we have someone who staffs our triage phone line and is available to take your call, take your questions, hear you out, and help you make a decision about how to help keep a child safe.
Thank you for that. Mary Whittier from Resolve, go ahead.
Yes, our website is resolve-roc.org. Our phone number is 585 425-1580. Two other resources. There is a book that we give to nearly every client. If there is someone listening and want, now sometimes it's not healthy and safe to have a book by your nightstand, but there is a book called Why Does He Do That by Lundy Bancroft. A lot of our women are just so confused by the power and control and why does he do it. It's a phenomenal resource. If there is someone out there, if they want to email us, get in touch with us, we will give them a book. And there is another beautiful resource that we actually have in our waiting room. It's a book called Read This Till You Believe It. And it's really very, very inspiring. It was written by M.H. Clark, who's done a lot of inspirational books. And so I would say call us, visit our website. If you are in need or would like one of those books and it's safe to get that to you, or for if you can somehow go online or have a friend order it for you, those are really the Why Does He Do That book is really, really insightful.
All right, let me get to Megan DeChateauview from Willow. Go ahead.
Sure. So our 24/7 hotline for crisis and support is 222-SAFE. It's 222-7233 or 222-348-7233. Sorry, I hear the music. Our website is willowcenterny.org for information on court orders, on shelter. And then hotline.org is another really great resource for people for the national hotline, thehotline.org.
Jerry Lynn Sparks' book is Surviving Mad Men, and that is available now as well. And I want to thank all of you for reminding our guests that, number one, there's another side to this crisis with the virus. There, we will get past it, and we will all do that together. And there is another side to a crisis in our lives because of these organizations. Thanks to all of you for what you're doing and for educating our community, and thanks for being there during this time.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
Wonderful having all of you. All right, short break. More connections coming up.